Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about the unreal world of quantum mechanics. Now, for me, it's not changing states. That's pretty under control. I'll talk about that in a short while, and then eventually get on to things which really spook me, which is the fact that things move about without rotation or visualize. It's sort of like a kiddie cartoon where the parts fly out of an explosion without spinning or rotating. It's this very still, sort of cartoon-like way that things move. Let's talk about transition from one state to another. This indeed requires a jump if you don't have if you haven't modelled the space that things are in. If you have a complete void of space and you have to generate a little ball of light as a photon, which is one of those squiggly things, to throw them out into space. Indeed, yeah, you have to have it within no time whatsoever produce an electromagnetic wave and pop it out. But as you do simulations and get across things, you realise that the lines on a quantum mechanical energy diagram are steady states for things which solutions to the wave equation, which lasts for a long time, and transitional. So it's defined as t equals infinity. Your situation is wave functions put down, but you can have intermediate wave functions, like combinations of the two states described in there, and the energy's got to go somewhere, so it's got to be coupled as it's going there, coupled to the field, the radiation field. So it's got to. If you can have a transitional state halfway between two quantum states, where the atom is half one state, half the other, and the deficit energy between those two states is deposited into the fields, supported into the field. Now, what this is looks like is your first quantum state, a shape, so like a dough ball, or the next one might be like a donut-shaped electron distribution, and between the two, you have the two states, the little phase angle between the two states, and the two states will have a rotation in space, an energy-dependent part of the Schrodinger wave equation, and the difference between that will be your third body, which is your space around it, your space which is absorbing the electromagnetic radiation. And so what happens is that you have this state, it's sort of like giving birth, it gives birth to a photon, and almost it's like this organic thing, it oozes out of oozes out of the atom, or the atom holds an electron, the electron is giving the birth, so it's sort of like the atom is a electron brothel, so to speak. It holds all these little electrons, and it's got a loose electron at the end, which is just hanging around down the outside, but it's less strongly held. It can't get into the atom because it doesn't have the correct symmetries. And it can actually go between these two states. It can absorb, and it actually interacts with the space around it. This is nothing unusual. This is to be expected. And so this process can be a short process or a long process. This is where the shape, the atom, if you could see it, pulsates between the egg and the donut. It pulsates between the two, slowly moving between the two, and as it does so, between those two, it emits emits a photon. So when it pulsates, the actual phase changes and it loops around and one after the other. And each time, as it moves from one state to the other, it puts another little deposit of energy into the field around it. So you can get two things. You can get a photon going out from an atom over a long period of time, or a short period of time, much more energetically. It's got a choice between how it does it, but the same amount of energy is deposited in there, and it's the energy corresponds to holding capacity, the information holding capacity of space. It so adds up together. So your photon, rather than flashing out, is this long birthing process where it oozes out of the electron over a period of time. So, look, for instance, I have an atom, and it's going to produce a electromagnetic wave, and the electromagnetic wave is going to have several wavelengths through it. So that several wavelengths will take, that photon, it's not instantaneous, it's going to take a period of time. So if it's a very low intensity photon, it's going to take a while to produce. There's going to be several wavelengths in it. Each of those wavelengths is a wavelength divided by the speed of light divided by the wavelength unit of time. If that's the amount of time it's going off. So if I say have a photon with 100 little wavelengths in it, now if it is going to have 100 little wavelengths in it, it's going to have a beginning and an end, and it's going to, in order to have that, it's going to have a variation in the frequency. So if it's a very long photon, say like a photon going out of a laser, it can be a very sharp process. It can go for a long time, but if it's a short one, it'll be a broad range of frequency. It will. So it's sort of like if you hear a beautiful triangle, it's a beautiful sounding, or if you hear a cymbal, it's a bit more ch like that. You can get them at the same brown frequency, but the cymbal can be a short clash. The triangle is bing and ch. It's sort of like a snare drum type of thing coming out of it. And so you can get across there. Now, I might put up a YouTube of this actually happening, the atom slowly pulsating forward. Now, one of the things, the spooky things about this is in order for it to, everything's locked together, space is locked together, and the process of going from one state to another, it has to actually push against the space, and it pushes an angular momentum, a quanta of angular momentum, that is, a energy, a bit of rotation. So with a photon is a unit of angular momentum coming out. So a photon and the transition are quantized. It's a long period of things. It's just the fact that lecturers don't choose not to show this process actually happening. They make a statement and they say something stupid, right? The transition is stupid, and they make a, I think so, and they're all dressed up there. They've got the name on the door with the professor written on it. They've got a whole series of books which they have on their shelves. They haven't necessarily read through it, and they're not showing this projection. So what I will do for this YouTube is show the actual atom transition, and it's straight there. So if you just sit at night with the equations and work through them, this is what you'll get if you just thoroughly work through them. And then there's a little known high-end quantum mechanics simulation called Falstad, and it's not to the open internet here. I think he's trying to get some money out of the poor little chap. It sounds an incredible person, but he's just got JavaScript and quantum mechanics together and visualization software. It's beautiful stuff. And you can see, you can get two hydrogen atom states, and you can ask for a transition between these two, and you'll see the phase of the two things rotate, and you can see the phase diagrams rotate as it moves across, and it will push out the energy into space, and space will receive it. And going ahead now, for all this to work, we have to have rotational symmetry stopped. That is, it's not going to work if I start to. It's sort of like having a spinning birth. If I can't birth my photon out, if my atom producing it is spinning around, it doesn't make sense. So this is the start of this spookiness. The real spookiness of quantum mechanics is not these transitions. Now let's get back to the statement. Just irks me. There's a difference between quantized, that is, it's a state which I have an equation for, a really curvy, complex equations for the potentials of that state. So if I took a whole series of measurements, I describe the actual physical spatial forces of that space over distance, a field of potential. I have a potential field, I have that locked down, and then I've got that as an equation, and then I can actually press a series of solutions through quantized numbers, 1, 2, half. They're not real numbers, they're integer numbers. And this says, now, this is not that the system is fixed to that, that if the system is to last an infinitely long period of time, just without transitions, and there's no free particles in it, then it is quantized, the story that it is quantized. Now, there's nothing special about that. The moment that you have a Hamiltonian and a wave function, it's an artifact of the maths. Well, this goes across. So the maths basically says that a normal number, an energy, a scalar number, times your wave function. So your wave function is your solution space field, existence field of an object. So an existence field, there is such thing as an existence field. How much, what percentage it exists at every particular point in space, it's maths. So a scalar times that number describing where it is equal to the Hamiltonian, or the energy, or the scalar field times your existence field. You put the two together, and that's the definition. And so the fact that things are quantized is the fact that you're just saying that it's a bound wave function. It's sort of like, to go and say, or guitar's probably not the best. I suppose a flute or an organ, where you're just trying to get pure notes. You could say that is quantized. That is, I can only press certain notes. I can press sharp notes, but I can't press any note in between these notes. It's out of tune. It is it is attuned. All we're saying in quantum mechanics is that the electron is a instrument tuned to the constant fall of space, and if you look into it, it can have any energy. The energy is not quantized. The amount of energy, so the frequency with which it produces, is not quantized. However, the things which are quantized are the angular momentum, and the angular momentum is quantized. And also, we have that's transition is a unit. It can only transmit a unit plus or minus h of angular momentum, whether it's clockwise or anti-clockwise spin into space. Now, the other quantum numbers are bookkeeping quantum numbers. That's sort of like seating. You're seating numbers. You can't have a J. J. Your seat number is J12.5. They're seating numbers for going out. So there's slightly different quantum numbers there. There is the idea of quanta, which is a multidimensional thing. So it is quantized, and it can give out a quanta of quantized photon. The photon is far out. So I'm being eaten alive by this mozzies here. People who listen into it. So a photon going out into space, it is quantized. It's got plus one. Can't have zero. Zero is it's sitting inside the atom, or minus one for a traveling photon going out into space. It can have those things. And the interesting thing is that it travels. A photon obviously travels at the speed of light. Therefore, it doesn't have time. And it's, so in, this is sort of this hard things to understand, that your atom or electron, which is pulsating, is pulsating over time, but its photon is becoming timeless as it comes out. It's the your definition of time coming out. And so your photon can have it has a quanta of energy equals E. The quanta of energy equals Planck's constant times the frequency. I've just got to. Yeah. So it's the frequency. Planck's constant times the frequency in hertz, or H bar, and the angular frequency. That's the same thing. Angular frequency is your frequency in hertz by 2 pi. So H bar is H on 2 pi. It adds it up. And there's nothing mystical as the fact that there's the quantization of space is not the fact that there's nothing. We're only just saying is that the space has got a limit. There is a fundamental aspect to it. There's a limit to sizes. There's a point at which we say things are fundamental, for which there are there's no further ability to divide it up or to work out mechanisms. It's actually one thing. And there's a few questions you have about the definition of time in it, in terms of if I've got a large electron. So we've got a large electron, and you can have a large electron in your mobile phone. You've got crystals. The crystals are degenerate. There's degenerate positions of your nuclei. You get an electron the width of your crystal in your mobile phone. But say, I could well imagine hitting one section of that at one point in time, and how it doesn't really appear to have an instantaneous process, but there's this thing about time, and it's because you select your mathematical functions, which are time independent. So if you say, I'm going to have some time independent wave functions to describe something, they are time independent, and you have this conundrum, this problem of, if you have a paradox of hitting one point in here, by time independent wave functions are instantaneous, and this is what you're saying, by a time independent wave function it is instantaneous, but it appears you can often get sucked into saying, oh well, what if this something happens here, this will instantaneously be here, how can it possibly happen? You keep on going through, you go through your maths, and you realize that your basis set, so a basis set is your bag full of wave functions that you have, can produce something, but it's an artifact of the fact that you've selected that basis set. If you have a short perturbation, you have to produce a new basis set for what's going on, and transition have a phase transition between, it is an artificial view, a time-dependent phase transition where you go from one basis set to the other. And this is when we say, we describe by a complex number, which with a phase transition between two basis sets, two wave functions, is because we're saying it's time dependent, and therefore we describe time this way. This is where we experience it, which you can see coming out. Now we start to get to the spooky aspects of it. One of the things that I can't do is I can't have a, so say if I have an atom vis-a-vis a shrunk down mobile phone, which is producing this stuff. So it produces a photon, it gives birth to it, and it has to give birth to it such that it's got a particular polarization, that information cannot give the information. I can tell a lot of things from a photon. I can tell the things like the magnetic field, the element, the stuff like that. I can tell whether the body as a whole, like the star, is spinning, moving around. But I can't tell you, the one thing I can't tell you is if the actual, the actual atom itself is spinning. So say if I have a mobile phone and I have it in a blender, I put a mobile phone in a blender, it's going to produce the same clarity of signal out no matter how fast I spin it. This is sort of like, if you go through all the things that you can tell beautiful things. You can actual fact, the CIA use a bit of this, is they fire a laser at a window, and the vibrations of the window give you a Doppler shift, and then they can, you could be in a car, and you can be having a conversation, and the CIA can be looking at you, and they can be, they don't necessarily have to have any shiny surface, any surface what they want. They can get some oscillation out of it, particularly in windows and embassies and stuff like that. It's this thing that they can actually get these tiny vibrations and pick it up. I can use this for a distant star, or I can hear earthquakes on other planets and things like that just by the vibration back from it, these lines coming through it. And this is a pretty amazing amazing thing. So I can hear star quakes, so the cosmos comes alive. I can actually tune into things, and I can hear the murmur of a whole galaxy just cacophonying about the place, things beginning to move and stuff like that. I can hear that. But one thing I can't hear if an individual thing is spinning. And of course they would be spinning, wouldn't they? In terms of, you can imagine if a star is a huge explosion, and you can imagine all the explosions in a proper, like there's two CGI films, and if I can say, this shows my boring life in terms of when I see a CGI film, let's say The Red Ring of Water, the rendering of water was one thing, and the rendering of rotation. You can see wind going through leaves, and the leaves move back and forth and stuff like that. But when they actually, the leaves rotate, as they do, wind goes through a branches, yes, the main thing is like that, but there's this very subtle rotation, and there's... if you do a CGI explosion, the actual things come out. Or if you occasionally see in the early CGI footage, a explosion will come out and the actual parts will just fly without rotating through. So this is the real world. Things rotate a lot. If there's explosions and there's transfers, there's spin. It's like a big billiard table things where you spin, and spins go through the place. Now, just a quick short. There is this sort of calling card. I don't know why people do it. This is where they actually give the calling card of set the audience parameters on what level of CGI they're going to go. So both, I think in Lion King, which is sort of like CGI up to a point where it really, this is the modern Lion, not the old Lion King, which was delightful. Delightful pictures there, but the new Lion King, where they have the fur, they've got the polarization, the my scattering effect in the fur brilliantly. Yeah, and they've just, you know, so for me as a physicist watching this, you go, oh, that's a great rendering of that equation. And then they do at the start of the Lion King, they show some water and some rain going out to show. For us physicists in the audiences, we can do this. I think also, I remember in the Lion King seeing the rotation effects. So water is another very complex thing to do. It's interesting how they do the Fourier spectrum of in waves, how they render waves and stuff like that. It's a little, I don't know whether you can get the full there's a whole series of the next generation of effects is when they get the polarization. So one of the things from fur and the my effect, my scattering, this is the other end of Rayleigh scattering. I'm going to have to really think. Oh, my scattering is a whole series of close angle scatterings. The scattering comes back out. In fact, it's rather beautiful to do it. So my scattering is in clouds. And again, you get this beautiful thing being a physicist. And this is something I haven't seen for a while up in the Blue Mountains. But in the evening, particularly in the Blue Mountains, you'll get these beautiful rainbow clouds about 5 degrees from the sun. So my scattering from the sun. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see, these rainbow clouds. If you type into the internet my scattering, M-I-E scattering, and you do things like that. It was one of these things that I saw at first on a spectroscope. I did a spectroscopic analysis of cadmium sulfide on a surface, and it produced my scattering, which was beautiful rainbow pattern in the spectrum. And people have been I knew what it was, looked it up, saw it, thought, wow, I wonder if this exists in nature. The next day I was in the pool looking up and I saw a my scattering cloud, and they are beautiful. The interesting thing is that, say, like, for instance, you're watching Lion King or you're watching clouds and stuff like that, you say, oh, look at that. Or look at that scattering in the water. You can see the my scattering, sort of its opalescent colour in some streams, some of the still streams in Australia. And going around tends to be a sign of yabbies. These are crustaceans. They tend to secrete something into the water, which leads to this opalescent colour that you see now. I don't quite know what it is, but again, that's my scattering. But the people around you say, look, I cannot see it. And it is very interesting in that some students, if they're hostile to you, can't see it. If they're open to looking at it, they can suddenly see it. Oh, yes. And it's gone. It's for a short time. But majority of people don't see the my scattering. Or if you're in the in the cinema watching these things. Now, of course, what's sort of happened now is that I now see my brain's less distracted by this and more on storyline, more recently. But getting back into this, the universe does not communicate the rotation, individual spinning of the object to you. That's one thing it doesn't do. And nor can it do it, because the universe, the medium between you and it, is rotationally frozen. That is, if I spin, my arms get pulled out at the same rate as something way over there spinning. There's no patch in between. Say if I have a frisbee with, say, little fibres on the outside, and little fibres get pulled out. If I threw my frisbee across space, those fibres would always be held out at the same rate. They experience the same force. The orientation of, I can't go through the universe through a patch and then suddenly see it's a new rotational state. I can't go through a state which is, it's through a rotational continuity. So that what that means is that your atom, as it's doing all this stuff, is actually frozen in space. It's not rotating in space. Because if it was rotating, it would pinwheel rather than shoot its photon in a particular function into space out, it would blur, it would slur its photon out. Say if I did have a linearly polarized photon coming out. You can't have that one, but you can have a null, and this is pretty amazing. You can look at a laser through a polarized filter from the side, and you can see, polarized light out the side. You can look at transitions. You can often sometimes see laser transitions much more easily through looking at the polarization effects. It depends what you're trying to do. The spinning can't get through. You can't. It's one of these things. You can't spin something and get it to radiate light out. So you're getting it to radiate polarized light out. In general, it will emit in a plane, but not polarized, not on the north and south, it will radiate north and south, but not, oh God, not through the equator. My God, these mosquitoes are really killing me. This is one of the things about it, is that, my God, the atom there is not spinning because it's stuck by its magnetic field. Where the magnetic field pins space, I don't know what's going on. So it's not spinning. And so this is perhaps the spooky aspect of space, that these objects in it, we see the macroscopically inside. It's sort of like this Chinese cartoon things where the objects move two-dimensionally, translated across, and I move a stick figure from one point to the other around a two-dimensional house, and this is an example. Just some of the examples of it. When I have a hydrogen, a nitrogen is the one that I know of, have experimentally looked at. If you have gas and you cool it down, at certain points of time it will lose different degrees of freedom. So I have some nitrogen, the nitrogen has many more times the thermal energy. So the amazing thing about atoms and molecules, to an extent, is that the actual structure of the bond, and that doesn't affect its thermal properties. Its thermal, first order of thermal properties, is just the number of draws, thermodynamic draws it's got available. So it will have a so many channels to absorb energy, and so it can, it's sort of like this one man or person, busking. It's got the harpsichord, it's harmonica, the drums in its back, cymbals on its knees, bells on its hips, and it can make as much noise as it goes. You put energy into it, it starts to put energy out through the drum, through the harmonica, through the bells on itself, the cymbal that does it, all like that. Whereas nitrogen, whereas helium is just got nothing. It's got this beautiful operatic voice. Ooh, it can't do anything. So it's got all these vibrational processes off. But as it freezes, it no longer has the energy. It gets so cold. It's no longer energy to waggle its hips. Its heat capacity suddenly drops down. You no longer have. It's sort of like this. You're fueling it, and it's got all these fuel ports to go in, and suddenly it has only got. It's instead of having five, it's got four, three, and you get these little curves, steps in its heat capacity. And its heat capacity eventually goes down to looking like a noble gas. Just before it liquefies, it begins to stop vibration. Right, so you can sort of imagine like that. It gets so cold it can't vibrate anymore, like that. But surely it will still rotate. No, it stops rotating in our space. So what? I don't know what it was doing before, but it can actually stop rotating, and it begins to move around the place without and translate and stops rotating. It becomes like a poor CGI footage, and these begin to stop moving forward, and you can see through it. So this is one of the attributes of your quantum mechanical wave functions, which you say a time, if you go for time independent, you can simulate time by actually putting your state and your perturbed state and phases, which you're allowed to tickle through, and you can say, well, these are two stationary states, and they can only exist in those states, and you get your story up. But it's actually much more complicated when you've actually got a particle moving in space. So for the emission of light, the actual particle itself can't rotate. Or if it's rotating, you can actually stop it. If it's physically rotating, so if I've got a nitrogen, it can actually, if I put things which will kick it around, I can start it rotating. And in general, what happens is that most reactions are randomizing ones. So most interactions randomize it. So very rarely can you get some unusual processes happening. In general, you can either freeze it all up or heat it all up, or freeze it all down, heat it all up. And when you freeze it down, it stops rotating in space. So this is true. I don't know whether it will be in Wikipedia. It is true coming up. Now, I just want to say there are these things called... So you can have the temperature of something is the temperature right throughout it. So the electron temperature, the rotation temperature, the vibration temperature, and stuff like that will all go through. And a temperature is basically measured by measuring the ratio of a higher state to a lower state. So if there's only a little bit at the high state and a lot in the lower state, that's a cold temperature. Now, if you have the same amount in the high temperature and the bottom state is the same, that's infinite temperature. That's E to the... I think that's where you put it's e to the energy difference divided by the temperature, and you divide them by the temperature, that's E to the zero, the ratio is one all the way up. If it's a higher state, a higher state has more energy in it, more population, you've got a population inversion, and the bottom state you have, it's actually negative temperature, or you can actually say that's going backwards in time. So a laser is a beautiful example of local time reversal. Beautiful, beautiful example to go through there. Or negative temperature. You've got all things. And so, yes, I have a physiological feeling of temperature hurt. But that's a whole series of, like, a Ruby Goldberg machine of something happening, and eventually, oh, my brain, it's like that, and I've been conditioned to think that if it hurts and it feels hot, it is hot. But the actual science definition of temperature is the amount of in the top state to the bottom state, and things as they reduce in temperature can eventually they stop and eventually go towards being a noble gas or a Bose-Einstein condensate if they are bosons. And they stop doing things, and they reveal the fact that you have this really contrived sense of rotation. So I can definitely rotate in space, but I do feel my arms pull out. You know, what's going on there? And there's this thing which doesn't rotate, so you've got them. Now here comes the spooky part. Have you ever seen the nuclei of atoms drawn in the ball liquid drop? I think if I dislike Niels Bohr, it's sort of like someone who has been slandering down the pub, saying, "Look, you're going out of business." He's had this effect of actually getting people not to do quantum mechanics, and so you get this sort of real. You can imagine that you can have this real resentment built up to this person. I'm sure that I've had a lot of resentment built up for me trying to do quantum physics in a non-quantum world. I'm sure this is what people have felt about me, but I feel that there's this person who's in the local pub who I don't know of. It's not the sort of pub I go into, and they're bad mouthing a particular suburb, a particular way of life, and you naturally start to question their credibility, where it comes from, and anger. But I'm sure if I met him in real life, no, I think I'd still dislike him. Like, you read stories of people meeting him, like firemen and stuff like that, and they just are blown away by him. But so he came up with the liquid drop model. I don't know if you've ever noticed that the nuclei that they see in pictures never spin. They're really good. They get smaller as they go further away from you, and they're just there, and they sit there, never spinning. I don't know if you've ever seen things. Surely things would you'd see the arse end, the dark side of them. What's the only way that you're ever going to see a nucleus in one of these pictures is you're going to have to walk around the other side of them because they're not spinning, of course. Quantum physics says something different to it. They don't spin on one axis, and they also don't spin on the axis going towards you. If you had one of them, people would just run out of the theatre. They'd just get angry. If I showed someone from ANSTO, our nuclear laboratory, which is just so painful, their education, they have a huge amount of education funding, part of PR for nuclear energy in Australia, and they just give out courses, show bags, happiness, and rubbish. But say if I have a nucleus, they never spin. If a alpha particle goes into a nucleus, as it does to whatever, if it does, or an alpha particle comes out, you get alpha decay. The alpha decay comes out like a really poor quality Japanese anime character, sort of bang bang, and then you see the character just moving across the screen. It's symbolic, and it should be, because that's what it is. That's a spooky thing. Now the bottom line is that these atoms have all the neutrons and protons and everything have their center in the exact center of the nucleus. The all the neutrons and protons sit between each other, and because they are elementary particles, they have no they're made out of fundamental elementary particles, made out of fundamental particles, but those fundamental particles themselves also sit in the middle of each thing. They have no, there's nothing, there's no repulsive force inside a neutron to keep the quarks separated, and there's no repulsive force inside the strong nuclear force to keep the particles apart, and there's no repulsive force inside at no point does the Coulomb force go repulsive. It's just that the space, the actual particles themselves fall in it, and they can't get down the plug hole because they're too big. It's sort of like a big potato not going down your plug hole. It does go down there, and so everything has fallen inside each other, and they're still there because they're that big. They're not there because they could go down the plug hole, and there's no stuff. If they could go down the plug hole, goodbye world, because that's an infinite amount of energy. Thank goodness you've got these stuff, and also they don't spin. There are these things of things really physically not spinning, and so this is the overall issue that I have in terms of I suppose when you know enough things, you have, it's sort of like coming out of the Lion King going, oh, did you check the CGI out there? Oh, I love that equation, the way they rendered that. And I have sort of very, very various grade pictures to it. It would be nice if they eventually get CGI, which does polarization or thin film effects. So if they had an oily layer, that'd be really interesting if they could do effect, a bubble. I'd be love to see them render a bubble in CGI. So it's lovely to do it. As to get the flesh and the fur there. So I just find it amazing. As someone who's forced to go down to the cinema and watch the same grade of anime, it's sort of like watching the same grade of anime over and over and over, and they and you have people who are just it's hard to say, they don't like me, and I not that I don't like them, that I just can't communicate to them. I can't say, hang on, can I talk to you for about 3/4 of an hour and explain stuff? And at all times, they've been paid to recruit people to their religion. A bit like, I actually have more respect for Mormons than I have for people in terms of that they're out there and they know that they're disliked. Oh, I shouldn't say that Mormons know that they're disliked. They know that they're taken as Mormons, whereas these people who are teaching the what I call classical atomic physics, classical view, like you have Aristotle and the spheres, the crystal spheres, that the sun is up there because it's been supported by this huge crystal sphere, and the moon's up there, it's a huge crystal sphere, and every objection you go, you say, funny you should mention that, it's a perfect crystal sphere. Funny you should mention that. So that's a good argument for God having set that up. And then you've got the next generation of Dante, who adds a bit extra. He says there's spheres up, there's spheres beneath the earth, and there's purgatory and Australia. I love that type of stuff. But then they go through. So that's very much to go through. And so this crystal spheres, there's electrons, and they are smaller than the nucleus. Not according to Schrodinger's wave equation, they're not. But go ahead. So what you're saying is that if I reject everything to do with Schrodinger wave equation and listen to you, you come up to the conclusion that the Schrodinger wave equation is a mystery. So do you understand why that's a bit doing? But it's really this Aristotle 3.0. They've come up with these mad ideas, and they've got a few signature problems which are real signature problems for really underlying reality as a whole. And just as a spoiler alert, the Bohr liquid drop atom with these really hard neutrons and protons, which are so hard they've got a surface and they can't stick through each other, that's rubbish as well. So I hope that's okay. All stopped and ramped, and it's helped me think through it, describing it. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.